Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. And this episode of Season 18 of Truth and Justice, our Justice Warrior season, we have someone who's new to me, who is friend of a friend of the show, of Michael Osbrook. I have with me Amy from the Case by Case YouTube channel, and she's coming on to tell us a little bit about the work she does there, as well as a case that many of you may not be particularly familiar with. I certainly wasn't real familiar with it, but it has a connection to a case we're all very familiar with. So first of all, Amy, thanks so much for joining me. It's great to meet you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Before we get into the case, tell me about what is your background? How did you come? Because you've been doing the YouTube channel for a few years, right? 3, 4, 5 years?
Correct. Actually, the case that we're going to talk about today is the reason why I actually began my YouTube channel. My background is I used to work for law enforcement. I worked for the Columbus Police Radio Room. So I'm trained with law enforcement communications, leads, all the things that fall in that category. And I have always been somewhat of a true crime fanatic and more of a supporter of the underdog, basically. Mm-hmm. And years ago, I got involved, not really involved. I was kind of like in the background with an organization called Foul Play. Foul Play was advocating for the Stephen Avery, Brendan Dassey cases out of Wisconsin. Through there, I met a handful of attorneys, Travis Williams being one, Cherie from Syracuse, New York being another. And when I started following the Delphi case, I came across the case we're going to discuss today, which is the Garrett Kurtz, Ashley Garth case that was kind of running sideline to the Delphi case. And we started doing some digging. I reached out to Ashley because, in all honesty, I was interested in Garrett Kurtz starting out, you know, thinking that Garrett Kurtz was arrested April 1st of 2019. April 22nd is when ISP, Doug Carter from the Delphi case, held their change of direction press conference and introduced the Young Bridge Guy sketch. Immediately, everyone took to that Young Bridge Guy sketch being a rendition of Garrett Kurtz, who had just been arrested 2 weeks prior for murder. I have sources on the ground from Carroll County law enforcement, and they've confirmed that, yes, change of direction, the Young Bridge Guy sketch was absolutely influenced by the arrest of Garrett Kurtz. Garrett Kurtz had connections to Delphi. He was a farmhand for Ron Logan, and
just in Delphi, but the Delphi case right there.
Right there, yes. He ran amok all over Ron Logan's property. Garrett Kurtz's father and grandfather were close friends with Ron Logan, and so was Nick McClelland,
who was the prosecutor.
Correct.
That's interesting. So I'm dying that that's just like many people. That's obviously a case that, you know, as I still can't get away from, and I just want to know everything about it. I'm going to restrain myself to talk before we get into that aspect. We will get there at the end of the episode here, but I think first we need to talk about the Ashley Garth case and the murder of Nicole Bowen that kind of started all this. But some of what you just told me about Garrett Kurtz and his connection to Delphi, I was not aware of, but I'm super interested in. The thing that really sticks out in my mind is that you have sources within the law enforcement there that say that the sketch was prompted by him being arrested, which is not the way that's supposed to work. It's supposed to be there's a witness that says they saw somebody that looks like this.
Betsy Blair is the really the only witness who, she was the first witness who helped participate in the creation of the Young Bridge Guy sketch, which was not the first sketch released.
That, right.
Her sketch is of the Young Bridge Guy. So in 2019, when they held the change of direction, her sketch was then released, and they were, the public was told that the older Bridge Guy sketch was then secondary. Uh-huh. And the FBI absolutely were hot on the tail of Garrett Kurtz. He was arrested April 1st for the murder of Nicole Bowen. And they took him down to ISP headquarters. They did interviews, DNA testing, lie detector tests. He had no alibi. There's another YouTube creator who took it upon herself to do, it's like 32 interviews with Garrett Kurtz while he was in the Newton County jail discussing the Delphi case. He blatantly admits he has no alibi, but he didn't do it. And apparently the DNA didn't match. I personally, Garrett's incarcerated for two different murders, which were both manual and ligature strangulation. So he doesn't really quite fit the Delphi case. However, I do believe that his arrest was what prompted the change of direction in the Delphi case.
Interesting. Well, let's back up to the case that you're primarily covering. So it March, like you said, March 2019, it was the murder mm-hmm. of Nicole Bowen, to which Garrett Kurtz was convicted for that murder. But then so was Ashley Garth was convicted of both a conspiracy to commit murder and murder, right? And she's the primary focus of who, I mean, you believe she was wrongfully convicted, correct?
I do. And going into this, obviously, that wasn't my position. I was reaching out to her regarding her case because there's a handful of people that are involved, and she was the only person that the public had never heard from. Mm-hmm. And she had taken a beating in the public eye. So I reached out to her and developed a friendship. And her pleas for, I need help. I did not do this. From there, I mean, this was 4 years ago. I then started out of, you know, my own pocket, taking trips to Newton County, Indiana, acquiring her case file, paying for transcripts, meeting with her family. Her father is actually very, very good friends with Anna Williams. They grew up together. Anna Williams being Abby Williams' mother, the victim in the Delphi case.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, working with different legal facets, I have spent, it took me about 2 years to compile an actual real case and learning about where the justice system absolutely failed her. And I'm talking about a public defender who literally handed her box of discovery and said, here, take this home and let me know what you think.
What's interesting about this whole thing too is, so that I don't think anybody questions that Garrett Kurtz murdered Nicole Bowen.
No, no.
Ashley's case is more in question and whether or not she was an accessory to that, but she got a longer sentence than he did, right? Is that correct?
No, she got, she was sentenced to 48 years.
And
he was sentenced to 55, even though on the onset, the prosecutor claimed that he was going to seek life without parole.
Mm-hmm.
This case involves a lot of domestic violence, and there's record and there's proof of that. This case, in Ashley's downfall, starts in January of 2019. January 21st of 2019, she had broken off all ties with Garrett and removed him from her home. He continuously, I mean, doing things like slashing tires, doing all of the crazy domestic violent things that, you know, we hear about. She comes home from work. He had broken in and was hiding in her bathroom, in her master bedroom. He had duct tape, rope, all kinds of different apparatuses already set up. He beat her to a pulp and strangled her unconscious multiple times, duct taped her, hog tied her with duct tape, stuck a sock in her mouth. And luckily for Ashley, someone came to the front door and heard the commotion. Garrett took off on foot. He was later tracked down. And I have spoken to Garrett about this incident, and he has flat out told me, because he was only charged with a felony 6 of strangulation, not breaking and entering, not attempted murder. He was charged simply with the felony six. And he said, Nick McClellan told me that I didn't have anything to worry about.
And so when was that incident? So
that was in January 29th. It was January 21st, 2019. He spent 10 days in jail and then he bonded out.
Okay. So we have Garrett and Ashley are in a relationship January. They were. She kicks him out. And then about 2 months before the murder in question
correct.
Is when this incident occurs with the two of them.
Correct. But during this time, on top of the drug aspect with Garrett, he was addicted to spice. He was addicted to meth. And don't get me wrong, Ashley made some bad choices herself, but she was always somebody who was able to recognize her mistakes and try to fix herself. During this time, Garrett and Nicole Bowen were a couple. So Garrett spent 10 days in jail. She filed a restraining order. So between January and February, Garrett violated that restraining order twice. And he was
Ashley filed a restraining order against
correct.
Him. Okay. Yeah.
Correct. And he was released the same day. And that particular F6, that strangulation case there in Carroll County, was allowed to drag on for a year. So there was no contact, with the violations of the restraining order. And Garrett is constantly being let off the hook. Garrett and Nicole are off doing their own thing. So February, the secondary violation of the restraining order happened. There's like an announcement on Facebook that Garrett and Nicole are engaged. And on March 14th, so we're talking less than a 3 month span here.
Right.
On March 14th, Garrett and Nicole and a third individual are pulled over in Tippecanoe County in a vehicle that is owned by a man by the name of Ray Hainish. Garrett doesn't have a license. They have methamphetamines, syringes, scales on them. They're arrested. They're bonding. They bond out that same night. Unbelievable. I mean, he's got pending charges in the next county over. Mm-hmm. She also has pending charges and they're both let to walk away. The car is then impounded. And again, this is March 14th. March 17th, Ray Hainish's body is found in his apartment. So they immediately recognize the fact that we have his vehicle in the impound lot. And these were the people that occupied the vehicle. They begin to look for Garrett and Nicole.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I don't honestly know. Ashley doesn't know either what transpired between the 17th and the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
But something, and I've been able to gather a little bit of information regarding that arrest in the vehicle, that when they got to the Tippecanoe County Police Station, Nicole basically flipped on Garrett and gave up the goods. Garrett was involved with a very high-profile meth family in Monticello, which is right next door to Delphi as well.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, she began to say, I will tell you what I know. I'm talking drug trafficking in and out of Indiana to Arizona and from California. It was in massive quantities. So how Ashley gets brought back in to this story, ISP go on the hunt for Garrett and Nicole Bowen. And they show up at Ashley's house and they're looking for Garrett. And mind you, I have to take a step back because I forgot to include something. When Garrett ran from Ashley's home, when someone showed up at the house and he had been strangling her and beating her, he had every intention of killing her. He took off with her cell phone. So when, and I have the police report, and he admits to law enforcement when they arrest him that, yeah, he took her cell phone, but law enforcement didn't take the cell phone away from him and give it back to her. So from that point on, Garrett has her cell phone. So when Ray's body was discovered, guess whose cell phone was on the coffee table in the apartment? Ashley's.
The apartment where he was found.
Correct.
Okay.
So ISP goes, detective, it's one in particular, his name is Detective Janky. They were looking for Garrett and Nicole. They went to Nicole's mother's home. Now, Nicole was a heroin addict. She had lost custody of her children. She wasn't allowed to live under the same roof as her children. But ISP went to her mother's home looking for her, and her mother didn't know where she was. ISP showed up at Ashley's house looking for Garrett and informed her not about the Ray being found dead. Ray Hainish was a gay male. And Ray, here's the kicker with that part of the story. When Ray was found to the public, Robert Guy, who is the prosecutor in White County, told the media that Ray Hainish died of natural causes, told the family that he died of natural causes. However, 6 months later, they changed the cause of death to homicide by ligature strangulation. And he was found actually tied hands and legs to the bed with the belt of a robe and a suit tie tied as a ligature. And Garrett Kurtz's DNA was inside of him.
And they had told the family that it was natural causes when that would.
Yes, that is headline news in the newspaper. For 6 months, they were led to believe that.
And yet they're looking for Garrett, so they obviously they couldn't think it was natural causes.
No, there's no way. Not based on the way the body was found. The apartment was completely ransacked. In fact, there were multiple parties thrown in the apartment. And I don't have any real facts. I do have people who have told me what they were told had transpired there, and that was Garrett basically catfished Ray. Ray was a male nurse. He had some money. My understanding is that he murdered Ray, put him in a closet, threw parties, destroyed his whole entire apartment. When he was done, staged the scene, stole his television and other items and his vehicle.
He had parties there while his dead body was in a
closet? That is what I have been told. I cannot factually prove it, but that is what I have been told.
Wow. So that just kind of recap where we're at. So we got Ashley and Garrett are in a relationship. They break up. He has this whole incident where he's tying her up and doing all that and flees, takes her phone. Then he gets with this Nicole, and he and Nicole are engaged. They're running, and then they're caught, pulled over in the vehicle of
Ray Hainish.
Of Ray, who has been murdered. And then as they're in the police interrogation, kind of taking us up to where now we're kind of between Ray's murder and when Nicole gets murdered, Nicole flips and starts talking about, you know, telling the police what Garrett did.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So how Ashley gets pulled into this dilemma is ISP comes to her house, and she had been through it with Garrett. In 2017 and 2018, Ashley had actually broken things off with him at that point and actually moved to Florida. She told her family, I have a problem. I have a meth problem. I have to get away from here and from him. She moved to Florida for a year. She was in Florida during the year that the Delphi murders took place. And she went to rehab. She came back clean and sober. She's a hard worker. And you know that the tale is old as time. You know, he works his way back in, and he did. And it just was her downfall. So when ISP showed up and they're telling her, you know, they didn't tell her that a man was dead, but they told her about the sexual implications. And, you know, Ashley, I think, made a rash decision at that point in time to basically blast this information on Facebook, calling Garrett names and saying, you know, the police are looking for you. I hope they find you, da 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 da. That in turn brought Garrett to her doorstep. Actually, not her doorstep. She was at a friend's house and he showed up there. And again, beat the living pulp out of her in front of people. She was unconscious. People at this house actually did perform CPR. And I think because of the people that were there, it's why Garrett allowed them to take Ashley to the White County emergency room. That was on March 25th. That was a Monday.
Okay.
Her trial attorney never even bothered to get those records. I did. There's 32 pages. And she was there for several hours. Garrett told the emergency room attendees that Ashley had been in an ATV accident and was unconscious, and they had performed CPR. Ashley, being afraid of him, this was the second time that he had, you know, almost lights out. You know, I can't imagine the fear of being strangled unconscious, but she'd been through that. She laid there at the hospital and kept her mouth shut. And I, you know, I've asked her, I said, why would you not say something? And she said, what difference would it make? They just let him out. You know, she's like, I was thinking that I was, you know, I was going to get released and go home. Well, that's not what happened. They released her and he wouldn't let her go home. He then took her all the way out to Newton County, Kentland, to a trailer that she had never been to that was owned by a girl by the name of Jasmine Parker. And his thing was, I'm going out here to get a tattoo. And when I get my tattoo, then we'll fucking go home. Just, you know, just sit down and shut up.
So so Garrett picked her up from the hospital?
He took her to the hospital.
Okay.
There was somebody else who went with them and dropped them off.
Okay.
They were at the White County Hospital on March 25th. And the paper trail that I've collected in this case, you know, when someone is telling you the truth and you can go back through and you can actually find in the most minuscule details that you go, damn, she's telling the truth. I mean, this girl has given me access to her Google accounts. I've gone through her correspondence with her trial attorney where she's begging. Now, mind you, Ashley did get out on bond after all this went down. And she's asking her public defender, hey, can we sit down and talk about my case? And she kept getting put off. I mean, I have all of this in writing. And she's sending her documentation from the hospital, like, this is the information that I have. We need to get these records. Her public defender didn't bother with nothing, absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There was no defense put on in this case whatsoever. And so
we still haven't got to what the case is, right? So she goes with Garrett to this trailer.
Correct.
Where he's supposed to be getting a tattoo. And then what happens next?
So he's there with, there's two people, there's two other people there, Chris Mathis and Jasmine Parker. Chris Mathis is the one who's supposedly going to be doing the tattoo. They couldn't find the right equipment for the tattoo gun. Ashley lays on the couch, falls asleep. She wakes up in the morning. Garrett's there. Jasmine's there. Chris Mathis is gone. There's another individual there by the name of Mikey Hiddle. Mikey Hiddle is a friend of Jasmine's. Jasmine is wanting Mikey Hiddle to take Garrett to go get meth. So Ashley starts getting her stuff together. And first and foremost, Mikey Hiddle is a willing witness to come forward. He was subpoenaed at her trial. He was sitting in the hallway when the prosecutors came out and said, you're not needed. You're free to go. Ashley's public defender never even spoke to him to know what he had to say. But Mikey agreed to give Garrett a ride to go buy meth. And Ashley knew where he was going, which was literally around the corner from her grandmother's house. And she wanted to go home. An argument broke out in front of Mikey Hiddle. And I've spoken with him. He's explained the whole story. She didn't want to be there. She wasn't comfortable with the situation, but Garrett wouldn't let her get in the car. Then Garrett tells her, get your shit together. We're going to go to the gas station. We're going to come back and get you. And they never came back. So they're going from Newton County to Carroll County, which is about an hour drive. In the car ride, this is the first time Mikey Hiddle has ever met this kid. This kid is going on and on and on in the vehicle about this girl, Nicole, who snitched on him at Tippecanoe County and is going to snitch on his boy, which is Jason Palladino, a whole nother facet of people connected to the Delphi case, and how when he finds Nicole, he's going to kill her. And Mike was like, I thought he was just blowing smoke. You know, he's just running his mouth. They get to the Palladino property. They go in. Garrett goes into a room with Jason, does what he does. According to Mikey, they come out of the trailer, get in the car, and a girl named Talitha comes out with Garrett, gets in the vehicle. Talitha Beckley, is Jason Palladino's girlfriend. So now there's the three of them in the vehicle. They're getting ready to leave, and here comes Nicole Bowen pulling in. Garrett gets out of the car, tells Mikey, we're going to follow you. I'm going to go with Nicole. Garrett gets in the car with Nicole. Nicole is what they describe in all of their interrogation videos as being dope sick because she was a heroin addict. So Garrett took her somewhere and got her heroin. From that point, they all four end up at Mikey Hittle's apartment. And we're talking all like half the day and most of the night. Ashley is stuck out here in Kentland trying to like calling people. She called her grandmother, and you know, her grandmother's 85 years old, wasn't willing to drive that distance to pick her up. This trailer where she's at, I've been there. It's out in the middle of a freaking cornfield. It's not like she could have walked out the door and went somewhere because there was nowhere to go. So she knows that Talitha is on Facebook, and Talitha was at the location where Garrett was heading. So she starts making these phone calls asking, have you seen Garrett? Talitha's telling her no, but the entire time Talitha is with Garrett. And come to find out through the work I've done on this case, Garrett and Talitha were also in an intimate relationship. So Garrett is physically involved with Talitha. He's also physically involved with Nicole. And he's beaten the crap out of Ashley, and he's got her stuck out here, and she's trying to find a way home. So Talitha lies, says, I haven't seen him. And she's like, well, I'm stuck. If you see him, I'm stuck out here, and I don't know if he's going to come back. Well, about midnight, he did show back up, and he showed back up with Talitha and Nicole. By this point, I am a firm believer based on, and it's in the PowerPoint that I sent you, based on the autopsy report, Nicole had more than likely been given a hot shot at Mikey Hittle's apartment. And because of her tolerance of heroin and fentanyl, I mean, the pathologist testified that she had enough fentanyl in her system to kill a horse. So they come walking in, and what do you think is going to happen when two females who do not like each other see each other? It's, what the F is she doing here? What the F is she doing here? It was a colossal mess. And immediately Nicole attacks Ashley. The fight breaks out. Garrett jumps in, grabs Nicole in a chokehold, and chokes her to death. Literally chokes her to death. And he describes it to the investigator in his interrogation video that it took her 10 to 12 minutes to die.
Was it, at that point, was it just Garrett, Nicole, and Ashley were the only ones there?
Jasmine was there also.
Okay.
There was no other male there.
Okay.
Garrett starts, the thing with Garrett Kurtz is that Garrett Kurtz is a fantastical liar. He is a master manipulator. And he has this sense of entitlement that if he's going to be made to look bad, he's going to bring everybody down with him. So he starts screaming at everybody in the trailer, help me. And no one's helping. They all go back into the bedroom, except for Talitha. Talitha goes out there and proceeds to help him. Garrett.
Wait, so it's Ashley, Nicole, and then Talitha is there also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you said Jasmine also is there.
It was Jasmine's house. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And he puts Nicole down, and he then begins to duct tape her, wrap her up, and plans on disposing the body. He then calls Chris Mathis, who was his tattoo guy the night before. he drags Nicole out to the car, her car, puts her in the trunk of her own car, leaves and goes and gets Chris Mathis. Them two take Nicole out to this, it's like a shipping container makeshift into like a deer hunting stand, put her in that. Then they both come back. So long story short, Ashley Garrett, this whole entire time is stop effing crying. I'm effing sick of you. You're going to be next. I should have taken care of you, you know, when I had the chance. So Ashley's going along with the program. Anything, you know, she's keeping quiet. She's not being disgruntled. They leave the trailer in Nicole's car. It's Garrett, Talitha, and Ashley. Garrett takes Talitha all the way back to Delphi to Jason Palladino's house. Jason Palladino comes out of the trailer with a gun and is demanding Garrett get out of the car. And a fight ensued because Jason wanted Nicole dead by way of hotshot.
Hotshot, is that just, I don't know what that is. That's just like an overdose?
It's a souped up concoction of multiple different drugs. And there is evidence that the toxicology report of Nicole, she has double everything in her system. And there is also the injection point on the arm was a missed vein. So, and I don't know if it was because there were witnesses and Jason was worried. I mean, him and Garrett got into it. He fired a gun at Garrett and missed. Garrett jumped back in the car and took off. He then drives all the way out to Crawfordsville. And I believe I sent you the interview that I did with this guy, Jeff Sneath. He takes Ashley all the way out there to Crawfordsville, which is a buddy of his who lives on a farm. It's like 3 hours away. And while they're there, the guy who lives there, his name is Jeff, and he was Garrett's friend, but Jeff had a girlfriend. Ashley went to the girlfriend and said, oh my God, I need help. This is what he did, and I can't get away from him. So the girlfriend went to Jeff and said, I need to talk to you. This is what's going on. Jeff immediately takes action, snatches Garrett up, puts a gun to his head, and says, you're leaving. And she's staying. And he sent Garrett on his way. He then takes Ashley the next day back to Lafayette. She then gets a ride to go into the Lafayette Police Department and basically spills the beans on Garrett.
So they found out Garrett did this because Ashley went and told the police.
Eventually, everyone that was in the trailer confessed, but Ashley did as well. And that was... Mm-hmm. And there's a whole undertone of conspiracy here, because Talitha knew about what happened to Ray, and Garrett had not been charged. So Garrett needed to keep Talitha happy. So Garrett was not going to, he wasn't going to implicate her in the death of Nicole. But Talitha was very involved in orchestrating. She's actually the one who got Nicole to show up at the property that day, knowing that Garrett was going to be there. So Garrett really couldn't burn his bridge with her. So he kept her name out of everything. She kept his name out of everything because it was almost like scratch my back, scratch your back. And I sent you a letter that Garrett wrote to Ashley that he's telling her, this is why I killed Nicole, and you need to keep your effing mouth shut. I'm here because you snitched on me. That letter was not allowed to be brought into Ashley's trial because, due to the fact that they used natural causes as the cause of death in Ray's case, they didn't charge Garrett. Garrett wasn't charged for the murder of Ray Hainish for 2 years, well after Ashley's case. Nick McClelland, once Garrett was arrested in Newton County, several months later, Nick McClelland dropped the strangulation case against him. So therefore, strangulation case against Ashley, the motive in the Ray Hainish murder, none of that was allowed to come into Ashley's trial. The letter wasn't allowed to come in because the letter had details about the Ray Hainish murder. And I mean, there's so much more. I mean, evidence-wise, there's so much more.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Things the prosecutor did. For example, Garrett tried to say that Ashley stole Nicole's crocheted hat after he killed her, because Garrett watched Ashley's interrogation video with his attorney. Seeing Ashley had on her white hat, Garrett comes up with the story, oh, that's Nicole's hat. If you watch Garrett Kurtz's interrogation videos, there's two of them. His first video is 3.5 hours long, and he spent 3.5 hours telling Detective Rowe how Chris Mathis, his tattoo guy, murdered Nicole in complete detail.
Mm-hmm.
And in his second interrogation video, Detective Rowe starts pulling out photographs and telling him, you do realize that there are cameras rolling 24 hours a day. Well, lo and behold, there was a camera across the street from Jasmine Parker's house that captured Garrett going out, getting in Nicole's car, backing the car around to the back, wearing a headlamp to put Nicole in the car. So Detective Rowe starts basically, you know, pulling out the pegs of his story. And then Garrett finally confesses. And he says, but this whole entire time, Garrett wants to know, well, who have you talked to? Who have you talked to? And he keeps referring to Ashley in his interrogation video as his girlfriend. Well, I left my girlfriend at my buddy's house. I just want to make sure she's okay. Well, no, you didn't leave her at your buddy's house. Your buddy put a gun to your head and made you leave her there.
Mm-hmm.
So Detective Rowe keeps saying, we've talked to a lot of people. Well, Garrett then sits there and continues to tell him how he snatched Nicole up, how long it took him to strangle her. I have the photographs of his arm. 7 days later, his right arm is still like high yellow from bruising from him choking her.
Mm-hmm.
He describes where he went and got the extension cord back behind the flat screen TV. Detective Rowe says, what was it plugged into? The surround sound. That's where he got it. Shortly thereafter, Garrett's whole entire story changed. Once they're in the county jail, he is starting to realize that Ashley is telling on him. And she's also being questioned about the Delphi murders. And he's under the gun in the Delphi murders. And he is led to believe, well, your girlfriend, she's throwing you under the bus. You better come clean. So he does all these interviews on it's called Open Secrets. It's a YouTube channel. It's like 32 interviews where law enforcement has him convinced that Ashley is implicating him in the Delphi murders. She wasn't. It was a ruse. However, Garrett then starts to change his story. Well, Ashley handed me the cord. Ashley pulled on the cord so hard that the extension cord broke. Well, you get the autopsy report, and the pathologist in the autopsy report says the extension cord that was tied around Nicole's neck, one end was cut. And Jeff Dorinsky, who was the Newton County prosecutor who attended the autopsy, cut the other part of the cord to remove it from her neck. It's listed right there in the autopsy. And I want to know what female on God's green earth has the strength to pull on an extension cord so hard that you can snap it in half.
What human? I mean, when I was watching one of your videos where you guys were talking about that, I'm like, I can't even imagine myself. I'm a big guy. I don't think I could break an extension cord by pulling on it.
No. So there's the whole extension cord theory. And then the white hat theory. The white hat theory turned into this big orchestrated deal at Ashley's trial. I mean, there's this picture of Nicole Bowen enlarged on an easel sitting in the courtroom in front of the jury for the entire duration of the trial. Her attorney never asked for it to be removed. Garrett finally takes the stand, which is, I think, day three. This is a 4-day trial, and starts going into, well, you know, she took the hat as a trophy. That was the first time that Ashley had heard this. Third day of a 4-day trial. So Ashley starts like, I didn't take her hat. The hat that I'm wearing in my interrogation video is my own hat. I have pictures of me in that hat before Nicole was ever killed. The next day, her attorney is like, we don't have time. I don't have time to argue this. It's closing arguments today. The public defender gets up in front of the jury and says, killers take trophies. And in this case, the white hat was Ashley's trophy, or was it Garrett Kurtz himself?
So what was the totality of the evidence? Because there's not much against her. I read there are some...
His words.
His words, and there were some DNA on a scarf, but I haven't seen how the scarf connects to... Because my understanding was it was manual and then an extension cord, as you mentioned, to strangle her. Like, where does the scarf come in? And
to be clear, the extension cord or the scarf, neither one, were the cause of death. Garrett putting her in the chokehold for as long as he had her, in the bruising on his arm, in his own words, describes how he choked her. He then claims that he was afraid that she might wake up brain dead. To finish it off, to be sure she was dead, he tied the extension cord and the scarf. Now, you have to when you're dealing with DNA, you've got transfer DNA. In the process of all of this, Ashley and Nicole went head to head briefly. I mean, maybe a 30-second altercation. Ashley is she's a very emotional person. So she's hysterically crying when Garrett snatches her up. Ashley runs back to Jasmine's bedroom. After Garrett is done dropping Nicole to the floor, he comes back to the bedroom by all accounts and all of the witnesses that were there, and starts smacking the living crap out of Ashley because she's crying and she's hysterical. He then goes out, gets the cord, goes underneath the sink, gets a plastic bag, grabs this scarf off of a lamp the scarf was draped over a lamp, and Ashley's DNA ends up on that scarf. Ashley's DNA is not on the cord. I mean, imagine that. I mean, you tie a cord, you pull it so tight that you break it in half and your DNA is not on it. But there is a very minuscule amount, and it's a mixture. And I have a gentleman from Australia who's a DNA expert that I had him on, and I had him review the analysis that was presented at Ashley's trial, and everything was based on a computer analysis. We don't know how many alleles. All we know is that out of trillions and trillions and trillions, the possibility that this mixture of DNA, the possibility of it being Ashley's, was like 18% out of trillions. And Dr. Silkman is like, there's absolutely no way that she should have been convicted. Her attorney should have gotten a DNA expert to argue the fact that there was transfer DNA. Then you've got the issue of the white hat. I did track down the photographs of Ashley wearing her own white hat prior to Nicole being killed. Then I was able to debunk this entire photograph that the prosecution put up in front of the jury that Garrett took the stand and testified to. Well, that photograph was taken the day that Nicole was with me, the same day I killed her. That's the hat she was wearing that Ashley took. Well, it's not. Nicole was found wearing completely different clothes. And the biggest kicker was, in the photo that they had of Nicole, one, she's wearing a post nose ring in this photograph. She's very thin face, very clean face. When she's found, according to the pathologist, she's got scabbing on her face from drug use, and she's wearing a hoop nose ring in her nose. You then pull up, and that's also in the presentation, the arrest picture of her from 16 days prior when she was arrested in Ray's car. Her entire face is covered with scabs. So that photograph was an older photograph that was taken, and whether the prosecutor nefariously, you know, set it up, or he was believing Garrett, you know, oh yeah, that's the hat. That's the hat. Ashley took it as a trophy. I've completely debunked that whole entire storyline, which takes that whole entire scenario away. Ashley, at this point, you know, we would like, I have power of attorney. She sat for 2 years. The head of the Indiana Public Defender's Office, Steve Schutte, filed a stay at the onset of her post-conviction relief. And she sat for 2 years. In Indiana, you do get public assistance, public defender assigned to you, but you're on a waiting list. She sat for 2 years and she was assigned a gentleman by the name of John Pinnow. John Pinnow has been a public defender for many, many years. And I have power of attorney. Ashley sent him correspondence letting him know that he was authorized to speak with me. I had an entire Google Drive of information for him. I provided all of it. I provided him phone numbers, witness lists, people that had never been talked to. Mikey Hittle being first and foremost one. Who knew that this had nothing to do with Ashley? Ashley was after the fact implication, revenge, because she was telling on him. And he was never spoken to. And he was dismissed under subpoena, never put on the stand. Neither one of Garrett Kurtz's interrogation videos were played at Ashley's trial, showing the perplexity of lies this boy told. He outright gives a whole entire description of how him and Ashley arrived at Jasmine Parker's trailer. And he's telling law enforcement that him and Ashley picked Nicole up. And that he felt so bad for Nicole sitting in the back seat. He's looking at her through the rearview mirror because she's heartbroken that him and Ashley are in the front seat holding hands. That's how fantastical he lies, because that's not how Nicole came to be out there in Kentland. That's not how Ashley got out there in Kentland. So
what does Jasmine say? So Jasmine, it was at her house. She was there. Did she give witness statements, and what was her?
She was, yes, her interrogation video is on my channel. She literally claimed that she saw nothing. She was in the bedroom. She didn't go out there. And she said, she's in her interrogation video, she's crying and she's like, you don't understand. You're going to get me killed because this dude and this girl, she even tells law enforcement, I'm more afraid of Talitha than I am of him. She was like, this woman, Talitha, was telling me how with the Palladino family, they had killed people, fed bodies to hogs, threw people in rivers. And she ended up, taking a plea and she got 6 years for assisting a criminal. She's out.
You're talking about Jasmine got 6 years?
She was a repeat offender.
And her crime was it just happened at her house?
Her house, and she didn't go to police.
Okay. And then what did Talitha get, and what did she say?
Talitha got, I believe, 8 years. Talitha was already on, Talitha had an outstanding warrant. She had been charged with breaking and entering with Mark Palladino in Pulaski County in Indiana, went for her hearing, got out on bond, then didn't go back for her hearing. So at the time that this happened, she had a warrant out for her arrest. She ended up turning herself in 11 days later, and she was booked, got out on bond again, then attempted to go to the White County prosecutor's office to basically get favor for herself and wanted to tell on Garrett for Ray's murder. She was called as a witness to the grand jury hearing in the Ray Hainish case to get an indictment for Garrett. She got 8 years because she was an habitual offender.
Does she say that Ashley was involved in this murder?
She doesn't say one way or the other. There's a letter that I have that I intercepted that she wrote to Garrett. And she's basically, she basically says, once you read this, you need to flush it. But I just want you to know that I got rid of all of my electronic devices because all of the messages from you and Jason Palladino are on there where Jason was telling you just give the B a hot shot. And we just need to make it known that the only person that didn't like Nicole was Ashley.
So the evidence at trial was simply, and Am I correct? Garrett didn't say that she killed her, that she just assisted, or did he say at trial that
assisted, that she handed, that he told her to get the cord and she went and got it after he had already admitted in his interrogation that he got the cord and he described where he got it and what it was plugged into, but that he was never impeached with any of that at trial.
It's interesting, and I'm going to direct people to go to your channel to get all the details, because we're already running a little long here. But it's a super interesting case, because there doesn't seem to be really any evidence that she was actually involved. But even if it were a scenario where maybe if she had handed him the cord, there's also other layers of this as far as like the domestic abuse and the controlling relationship between them. It's mind-boggling to me that you have this violent guy that did the things he did to her, that did the things he did to the, you know, admittedly the what he did to Nicole, the victim here, and then this woman who's been a victim of his abuse for all this time. Even if it was true that she handed him something while he's screaming her to hand him something, that equals her getting 48 years in prison for that.
Correct. And so when John Pinto filed her post-conviction relief brief, he left an astronomical amount of evidence off the table, and I was furious. And we did end up getting an evidentiary hearing. So I went to Indiana. We attended the evidentiary hearing. And this was, and this, mind you, this was Judge Moulter, who was the same judge who sat for her trial. And he filed ineffective assistance of counsel on Lori James, Ashley's original public defender. She was called to the stand. But the only ineffective assistance of counsel claim was the fact that she wasn't able to get Ray Hainish's murder case evidence into the trial. Well, that's not ineffective assistance of counsel when the judge doesn't allow it in.
Right.
She tried to get it in. The judge didn't allow it in because nobody had been charged. So that was kind of a wash. He did put Ashley's family on the stand to testify about the white hat. He was also able to introduce the probable cause affidavit from the attack from January. And Judge Moulter immediately says, wait a minute, Ashley Garth was a victim first? Was Garrett Kurtz's first strangulation victim? John Pinto's like, yes. So I'm feeling like, okay, that's kind of a positive reaction, because that information never came out in her jury trial. Well, then we now have a new prosecutor that's a female who replaced Jeff Dorinsky, who then stands up and literally verbally in front of the entire courtroom shouts out that Ashley's DNA is on the cord. No, it's not.
I say, which is not true.
Not true. And guess what? John Pinto didn't know it. John Pinto just sat there like a bump on the log. I was pissed. And when the hearing was over, I confronted him and I said, her DNA wasn't on the cord. Why did you allow her to sit there and make that statement and literally trying to reiterate a false fact in front of the judge? And then why did you not introduce Garrett Kurtz's interrogation videos and go over those? I said, Garrett Kurtz's interrogations videos weren't even played at Ashley's trial. And his response to me was, I didn't know that. And I'm like, well, if you would have read all of the information that was provided to you, you would have known that. So we go through the motions, the briefs that are filed in the post-conviction relief. Ashley has to meet 9 prongs. The 9th prong was the letter that wasn't allowed in that got admitted as evidence this time in the evidentiary hearing. And the appellate court deemed that the letter where Garrett says, this is why I killed her. I killed her to protect you so she wouldn't hurt you. I mean, that's literally written in the letter. You need to keep your mouth shut. I'm sitting here in jail because of you right now running your mouth. And the appellate court found that that wasn't merely impeaching. So she met 8 of the 9 prongs. Her relief for post-conviction was denied. The transfer to the Indiana Supreme Court for them to take the case was denied. So now her clock is ticking for habeas. And I'm working on trying to get her a successive petition filed.
Yeah. And I think that's a good spot to have you guys go to Amy's channel, Case by Case. There's a great discussion where Michael Osbrook's on there with you, along with a couple other attorneys. And they kind of talk a lot about, I was listening to that earlier today, a lot about like that process and how all of this works and everything moving forward. Just real quick before I let you go, I just want to circle back to, because I promise it with the Delphi connect. So what's interesting to me is, as much time as I've spent looking at the Delphi case, which it isn't as much as a lot of other people have, but it's quite a bit. The big question.
Just so you know, I launched episode 47 of the Delphi Vault on my channel on Monday. I went back after Rick was convicted. I said, okay, if he's convicted, because he didn't get a fair trial. The trial was a sham. At that point, I didn't have an opinion as far as guilt or innocence. I just felt that the guilt had not been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So I went back to the very beginning of the Delphi case, and I've covered it from that point on. Statements, screenshots, communications, everything that I have been able to get my hands on. So there's 47 episodes breaking down the timeline. Mm-hmm. Debunking the entire state's case is also on my channel. It's called the Delphi Vault. And we do go in and out between how the different third-party suspects are all connected. And there's that name, that Paladino name, that comes up repeatedly that I feel really needs, somebody needs to take a second look. But sorry, go ahead.
For me, the biggest question that I've had is, as I'm looking at all the evidence that's out there, looking through one thing in particular is the FBI's probable cause affidavit on Logan's property. Mm-hmm. And what I've said, I can't say I have a suspect, but when I look at everything that's in the file that I've seen regarding Ron Logan, my big question was, how was he ever cleared? Like, show me how he was cleared, because people will just say, well, they didn't pursue charges against him. So, but I was like, just show me how, though. Show me how he was cleared. So I just found it so interesting that this guy, who absolutely is a very violent person, that worked on that farm. And when you said that, that he looked a lot like this other sketch, and then the fact that, he says he doesn't have an alibi, I guess I have the same question for him. Do you know, how was Garrett Kurtz ever cleared from the Delphi case?
So I have kind of labeled Ron Logan the head of the snake. Ron Logan has lived on that property for years. He owned 40 acres. He frequented the bars, all of the different, diners. People came and went on his property. It was a revolving door. I don't believe that there was anything that ever transpired on his property that he wasn't aware of. Ron Logan was a bad guy. I mean, he was an older man, but he had over the years been involved in a lot of, shady things. And so I do believe that whoever actually committed this crime, there is a Ron Logan connection. Back in 2019, when they came out with this change of direction in the Garrett Kurtz sketch, I believe at that point in time, law enforcement could not get a DNA match on Garrett, and they could not put him in the area at all. He didn't have an alibi. He admitted that he was high on spice, couldn't tell you where he was, but they couldn't put him there. By the time we get to the arrest of Rick Allen, you have to understand what was going on in the county. There was a major sheriff's election underway, and you had an individual by the name of Mike Thomas who was challenging Tony Liggett for sheriff. And Mike Thomas was using the Delphi case and the mishandling of the case as, a basis for his arguments as running for sheriff. He was going to bring the FBI back in. He was going to bring in all of the experts. He was going to solve the case. And what is it, 2 weeks before the election, Rick Allen's arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Liggett wins the race. Michael Thomas is demoted. Michael Thomas files a lawsuit. Carroll County pays out an astronomical amount of money, and there's an NDA signed. He can't discuss the details of the payout.
Wow. So,
and I think this was just to get the case closed on the books and move on, because, here we are, 7 years it's taken them. And when you watch that case unfold and you realize there is a hair on Abby Williams' pinky finger that wasn't tested until the first week of trial, you have to ask yourself, what the F were you doing?
For all those years.
All those years. The results came back in during trial.
What were the results for the hair?
They believed that it was a Familia hair, more than likely they were saying it was Kelsey's. But the unknown male DNA that were on both girls' private body parts, the state sold a rotten book of goods to the jury and claimed that, well, you know, the unknown DNA more than likely came from the Patty's washing machine. So the Patty's washing machine is transferring only male DNA. And we know what males live in the household. So whose clothes are you washing? That's a male that we don't know who it is. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's another, besides the Ashley Garth case, there's a ton on Amy's channel on the Delphi case. I was watching yesterday some of your stuff on which Michael Osberg has mentioned on my channel before, all the business cameras, all that evidence that didn't come in a trial that they have. So go check out Case by Case. Then that's Case X Case is the YouTube channel. Check out Amy's work there. And Amy, thanks so much for joining us. And hopefully we get some results in Ashley's case. I hope so. Something's definitely not right with this one.
I really want to thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. I love your work.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $1 million each for stolen funds, fees for experts and lawyers, and out-of-pocket expenses. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join now and save up to 30% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.